Live on.
You're a third off.
This is Team Metro. Don't know. Mike.
So welcome everyone, it's 6 o'clock. Everyone ready? Good. So let's officially go to first agenda item, which is the roll call to order and approve the meeting minutes from last time. So I do the roll call and everyone please call out with a yes or something when I call your name. So John Edgett. And C, Lishan Marx. Elaine Flynn. James Wood.
Here.
Jane Saviska.
Arts, including commencement speaker Alex Guzman.
I don't know what the feeling is. I just can't believe it. It's a little unbelievable.
And the message he wanted.
Hello? Okay, we had just a voice issue. Again, Jane Chaviska. Robert Smith.
Here.
Daphne Hope. I see you. Eric Post.
Yeah, I'm here.
Ivan Santerio.
Here.
Ingmar Riedel Kruse is here. Anona Miller. I see you. Anona, are you there? Krista Post, I think she's out today, and Summer Dawn Cope.
Present.
And did I forget anyone? Anyone?
I'm a visitor. My name is Jeff Seligman.
Welcome.
If you got me for, I don't know if you called my name, John, for John.
So sorry, and I had two people at once, so. First, John. John who?
Edgett. Ingmar. I just didn't know if you called my name.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so you're there as well. Okay. And who else? Someone else just said something?
Yeah, my name is Jeff Seligman. I was on this committee like 20 years ago.
Okay. And so are you right now an official member or are you a visiting guest?
I'm a visitor guest.
Okay, welcome. Anyone else I might have forgotten? Good, so I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 voting members, which clearly makes us quorum. So that's great. So then the next point is last time's meeting minutes. Does anyone has anything to say, to comment on that? Does not seem to be the case. Does someone wants to make the motion that we approved the minutes from last time? Anyone?
I make a motion to approve the previous
James.
Meeting minutes.
Okay.
I'll second it.
And Daphne seconds. Okay. So everyone who is in favor of approving last time's minutes, raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Anyone who is against? Anyone who would like to abstain? Okay, so meeting minutes from last time approved with a unanimous vote. Good, so this gives us gets us to the second item, which is the call to the public. This is the opportunity for the public to address the committee. Due to time constraints, the total time allocated for this item is 10 minutes, and all individuals will be limited to 3 minutes each. If additional time is needed to address a particular issue, it may be considered for addition to the agenda at a future meeting. Additional comments from the public submitted to our website will be shared anonymously. Okay, anyone here from the public who would like to say something?
I just wanted to mention these vertical reflector poles that you've got are a real problem.
Who's speaking?
My name is Jeff Seligman. Oh, I'm a retiree from the city of Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And I bike quite a bit. And I noticed that you have these vertical poles in various places throughout the city, but the reflectors are worn out on most of them. The section at the end of Country Club by 210 is completely destroyed. Trucks and other things that going at night have wiped out those reflectors. They're all gone. So I'm thinking there must be a better way of doing it than the way they're doing it right now.
Okay. So I hear you suggesting two things. One is repair what has been destroyed, but on the other hand, also doing it better next time in a different way that is less likely to be destroyed?
Yes.
Yes. And then you say particularly country road, anywhere else that you're aware of?
There's some, I think when you go over Campbell, when you go over between near River Road, if you go from Prince Road over the thing up to River Road, there's some along there also.
Okay. Are you able to send us some pictures to email them to us?
I don't know if I can right now.
Okay. I mean, maybe not right now, but we have on our website also, you can basically leave comments there and you could...
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe check now, and if you don't find it, I mean, let us know or put it in the chat and we send you. Or maybe Lydia can put in the chat the comment. Good. Thank you. Anyone else from the public? Ed Whale has a...
Yes. Hopefully everybody can hear me.
I think there's some echo.
There is an echo. Well, I don't know how to use Team. I usually use Zoom.
Now the echo is gone. Please continue.
Oh, it's better? Okay. I had meant to attend last month's meeting. I did notice in the meetings that the very first item of a lady who was feeling unsafe with a bicyclist passing her on the loop. And I had sent, I had communicated with Lydia of my suggestion that pedestrians should walk on the left side. And I know it would require a lot of additional signage, but on the roads, you know, the Arizona law is that you walk, pedestrians on the roadway have to walk on the left side, which is oncoming traffic. And there's, you know, good reason for that. I ride the loop frequently, shall we say. And now the advent of type 3 electric bikes, which go up to 28 miles an hour, it is becoming more and more unsafe, I'd say, as people just, you know, fly by you on their bikes. But the fact that I always go and say that I'm passing on the left, I call out good morning, no matter how I do it, the people that are walking always jump. It startles them. And I have walked on the loop previously, and I too experienced that. And you wouldn't experience that if you're walking towards the oncoming traffic. And I don't know how to bring that about, other than a lot of signage, but I thought I'd bring it to the committee's attention and see what your thoughts are on it.
So thank you. We appreciate that input. We certainly referred it to the Loop subcommittee. My understanding is, so they can rediscuss the issue. I think there are certain laws, and it would require some significant change to signage, and I'm not sure whether that's feasible. I also don't know whether it's truly more safe. So Daphne has her hand raised. I don't know whether she wants to comment it. I mean, the short answer is we were referred further. I mean, it's not in our decision. It seems to be not an idea that will be implemented, but we can thank you for your input, and we certainly will put it forward. Daphne,
can I make a quick comment?
Yes.
I'm Jeff again. I helped the city implement the trail many years ago. It's designed by Matt Zoll. And when he designed it initially, it was designed for bikes to be the primary and for pedestrians to be secondary. And so it's difficult for them to work together. Yeah, you have to tell them you're passing and stuff like that. But originally, they didn't design it with pedestrians in mind. They designed it with bikes in mind and pedestrians as secondary, because they didn't think pedestrians would be walking those kind of distances. So I just thought I'd mention that. Also, there are sections of the bike trail that need repair, and I don't know who's in charge of that, but there's a whole bunch of repairs that need to be done.
Okay, so thank you for that as well. So let's not get sidetracked here. So we primarily take input from the public. So Ed, we appreciate it. We certainly will put it forward, and there's a general considerations of how to make the loop safer and how to make it pleasant.
How to make it pleasant for everyone.
Yes.
Good. Someone else says? Jim Malusa?
Yes, hello everyone. I'm Jim Malusa. I was on the bike committee 25 years ago when Matt Zoll was running it. And I'm happy to see that you guys are still at work. My comments today are about the Grant Road widening, sections 5 and 6, and the crossing at Treat and Grant Road. I went to the open house on Monday to see the plans, and to my surprise, they've changed a bit. Can I share a screen? Does that work, or was that not possible?
Lydia,
would you want me to try?
Yeah, please try. Yeah, please I don't know whether you need some permission.
Okay, let me see here. Oh boy, it's not what I wanted, I think. But can you see that?
Yes, something seems to change. Yes, we see it.
Okay, great. So previously, this was a different configuration. By previously, I mean a decade ago in the early planning. And this is the latest. This is what we've seen on Monday. And so your top of the screen is north, Treat. And the issue here for me is that now what they've done is they've reduced the median here to 4 feet. It's 6 feet for most of the project. And so the median refuge here in the center now is only 4 feet wide rather than 6 feet. I asked why. One of the engineers there, they said the city is not, in their words, they say that they don't want median refuges for the interest of safety. And they also said they wanted more room for the bay horse. Now, my primary lament here is that this issue of median refuges has been settled years and years ago by studies by the FHA and others. And they in fact, are a safe way to cross. So I'm asking the Bicycle Advisory Committee to ask the city, is there any way that they can make this a 6 foot median again, refuge, or even 5? 4 is awful short. And that's my comments for the Bicycle Advisory Committee. Thank you for listening to me.
Yeah, thank you. Can you please again say the particular street?
I'm sorry, I couldn't. Pardon me?
What was the street?
Oh, Treat. It's the Bicycle Boulevard. Treat Bicycle Boulevard. So it gets a lot of traffic. I can send along the comments of the engineer I spoke with.
Hello.
I could email those to you. Would you like that?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Should I email you the response of the city to my query about the median width?
I mean, you can certainly
email us.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good. Anyone else from the public? So then I have to read out, but there were two emails that were sent to us from the public. One was, so I put in the meeting minutes the full emails, so you can read those. But one was requesting better signs and traffic direction on Sabino Canyon Road, and they added a picture there. And another one person said that the person had already submitted multiple tickets regarding 2229 West Anklam Road, and particularly that the cleanup is not happening after rain, but also in general that there's lots of sand on the road, in particular on the bike path, and so it's impossible for cyclists to bike there, so they're forced on the main road, and which leads to danger. And There are two actions items here. One is these things should be cleaned, obviously, and we need to forward it because this person apparently has not been answered, which is unfortunate. Okay, so we will forward this to the calling sources. Anyone else about the point call to the public or from the public?
I do have one thing, Ingmar.
Yes, please.
I was sent a comment actually through the Living Streets Alliance. The Vanessa, the executive director over there, sent me this comment. So it says, I've been cycle commuting for over 50 years, now cycling from Foothills to University of Arizona. I suspect this is far-fetched, but is there any way we can campaign to change laws about the use of sidewalks? I am more and more petrified each day I commute when drivers swerve into my bike lane and while they're on their phone. I started using some sidewalks and no problem so far, no police hassle, but my understanding is I'm not allowed to go on sidewalks with my bike. Could this possibly be changed?
Thank you. In case anyone, I mean, obviously we just take it in and pass it further. Anyone wants to make a quick comment on that? Does anyone know about illegality? I assume it's not allowed to, maybe for children, small children is allowed to bike on the sidewalk, but if there's a sidewalk, if there's a bike path, we have to use it as bikers, right?
Eric Post here.
Mm-hmm.
Just two things come to mind. It's good that we take that in, but we need to be careful. We're an advisory, not a advocacy committee, so we don't have the ability to change the laws or influence that, but we can advise if we feel that there's something important. And I think the League of American Bicyclists and a lot of other organizations have realized that the dangers on the sidewalk really outweigh the dangers in a roadway. And that's just something to maybe go look at and research and maybe get a bicycle safety class that can teach us, you know, like the League Cycling Road 101 or whatever they call it these days, that can teach us how to fare better with traffic. And that would maybe be a good way of looking at things.
Thank you. Good. And Jim, you still have the hand raised. I don't know whether you want to take it down or whether you have something to say. Good. Anyone else on call to the public? Then I come to item number 3, which is updates from law enforcement. And I see Sergeant Brett Hoft here. Welcome.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for having me. Lieutenant Brett Hoft, Tucson Police and with Traffic Services. The update that I have for City of Tucson, unfortunately and very tragically, in the last month and a half, we have had 3 cyclists killed in fatal collisions. Of those 3 incidents, one of which involved a cyclist that swerved out of their lane and across the lanes of traffic on Stone into the path of an oncoming car. In the second one, we're still doing the reconstruction in that case to determine whether the cyclist was at fault or the driver of the vehicle was at fault. I can't really give any details on that one. And then in the third case, which was the most recent one, we had a cyclist killed by a car that ran a red light at Euclid and University.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Anyone? Okay, so I have one. Do you take any, I don't know, particular lessons from those more recent incidents or in terms of bike safety or something? Or it's...
No, not currently. They're taken as a group. There aren't any patterns or trends amongst the 3. That I don't have anything on that.
Okay. Thank you. Jane has a hand raised.
Yeah, maybe these are unrelated. I work in that, actually, I literally just crossed the street right by there. Is there anything you think could be done around traffic calming in that area, or there's nothing you can do about people who run red lights. I mean, we also had, you know, a drunk driving incident that killed students nearby. Those were pedestrians, but that whole area, I mean, there's thousands of people that need to cross there safely on a daily basis. Any insights?
You're referring to Euclid, ma'am?
Euclid, yeah. Mm-hmm. Euclid and also Park. I mean, just that whole area on University, what connects the university to, you know, all the arterial streets around there, where there's a lot of pedestrian and cyclist, and that's also a bicycle boulevard. So it's kind of where we encourage our pedestrians and cyclists to do their, you know, to walk or ride. What can be done to make that safer?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that DTM recently updated the Hawk signals and whatnot at, I believe it's 2nd and University, where that other fatal incident occurred at. I don't know of any other traffic calming measures that DTM is looking at for the Euclid or University corridors. I do know that the U of A PD is part of our regional traffic task force, and we have run two different task force deployments for enforcement through both of those areas within the last couple months. And we do have additional deployments planned for the future for enforcement purposes. And I do know that there is growing conversation among city government as to whether or not to pursue photo enforcement again in the future via ballot initiative. But I believe that's in the very early stages.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Summer Dawn has raised her hand.
Yeah, in reference to, pardon me, I commute with my child, cargo bike, right there at the Euclid University intersection is part of my daily commute. And I noticed something that happens every day that makes it so dangerous just to ride down that part of University, which is kind of inevitable because that's where it's kind of the safest way to get to the university. You know, the back end parking is neither here nor there, but delivery drivers will double park in the lane. And so it's like, if you make it across Euclid, you're immediately met with either train tracks or people that are parking to pick up food delivery. And if they're double parked in the traffic lane, that means they're also parked in the median. So it's like, it's so hard. You know, it's one thing if police are parked there, or, you know, the SunTran folks are parked there because, you know, that's their job. But the delivery drivers make that, just that stretch from Euclid to Park, so incredibly dangerous for people to even like dodge them because of the train tracks. So that, it's something that I've been dealing with a long time. And yeah, I don't know. I guess the suggestion is to, like, if we can, you know, somehow, if there's beat cops or if there's somebody there that can kind of help regulate and move those delivery drivers through, it would be really helpful to cyclists.
Do you have a particular time of day that you see that increase of activity?
It's mostly in the towards the evening, you know, when people are getting off of work. On the weekends, it's all the time. It's in high delivery kind of service times. You know, during the day when school is in session and people aren't as around, it's not that big of a deal. It's still unsafe, but it is mostly during the like evening rush and kind of all weekend. Because people like to stop and drop their friends off and in the lane and, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, I know it can get hectic just because there's so many people down there and it can be super difficult. But yeah, mostly rush hour times and food delivery times and the weekends.
I'll refer that to our patrol division for our community service officers that are over there that do primarily some of the traffic enforcement. And I'll specifically reference the evening hours for them.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem.
Ingmar, you muted.
Anybody else?
Sorry. Jim? Melusa?
Yes, this is a short thing. I cannot find any email address associated with the Bicycle Advisory Committee. So could someone put that in the chat, and I could have a way to get a hold of you?
Did you put it in?
Thank you.
So I just want to also what Summer Don just said on this park close to the university. For a while, it was my daily commute. I had now changed route. There's always someone in the bike lane. I felt I never could kind of use this as a bike lane. So I feel like I would say it's almost useless, but either one makes some real barriers to basically force cars really out of there, or it seems almost impossible. So maybe it's something we as a committee should take up and also write a letter to the city or to the university. Good. Anyone else?
I just thought I'd mention that a cyclist was killed about a year ago. A driver made a left turn. I think he was on Campbell and wiped him out. Didn't see him. And there's a big lawsuit going on.
Good. Anyone else for law enforcement? Seems not to be the case. And thank you very much, Sergeant Bradhoff. You're more than welcome to stay, but you're also, of course, welcome to leave. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so this brings us to item number 4, which is announcement, updates, and questions for related entities. So first one is GABA from Daphne.
There are no reports from GABA today.
Good. And we move next to Moving Transportation Master Plan Project. Daphne, you also wanted to say something, maybe?
Yeah, just really quickly. I actually just attended a meeting of our Oversight Committee 3 hours ago, and we were working through the draft themes and vision statement for the plan. Safety appears to be one of the largest concerns, which is not surprising. The online interactive map and survey have generated 3,200 responses so far. And at the end of May, it's the end of that survey. So if you've got any final comments, please go to movingpima.com and make your comments known there. But interestingly, next to safety, traffic congestion was the next most serious concern. So the consultant has prepared some draft themes and visions that the committee has been working at. We had discussion about that. I have provided comments as I represent the cycling community. Safety for me as a cyclist and for those people that have spoken to me about this seems to be the big concern for us. And safety encompasses a wide range of things, not just good planning, but good construction, good design, good maintenance, and good enforcement. So all of those things together really would make a solid, safe transportation network for cyclists. As we move forward, the next meeting we're having is on June the 3rd. We're going to be looking at some draft goals, but I'll just review the sequence of events for this project, which is carrying through until February 2027. So the community engagement, as I mentioned, has been ongoing from January of this year to May. It finishes at the end of this month. The next step is the vision and goals, and that carries forward from March and through to July. So that means the consultant's been working on it, but we as an oversight committee will begin to look at that in June and July and provide input. Following that is the network identification and project selection. And that goes from April through to August, so over most of the summer. After that is project prioritization and implementation plan, and that carries through from the end of August to November. Then from November to next February is the final plan development, when the consultant goes away and actually writes up the whole plan. There are still some public meetings, public open houses going to be scheduled in June, but for the most part, the whole public consultation section is effectively finished, at least through their online survey. However, by getting your comments into me on any one of these things, as I provide you with updates, I'll continue to make our concerns and recommendations known to the consultants through the oversight committee. I'm hopeful that we're going to have a strong plan that really does represent the importance of cycling as a component of our transportation network. I think the staff that we're working with in Pima County certainly understand that. It's a matter of weighing priorities with other competing interests, but I think that we can have some strong statements and good projects come out of it. So going forward, I look forward to input from this committee to identify some of those projects and help us define a better future for Pima County.
Thank you, Daphne. Any comments on that? Jane, you still have your hand raised, or do you want to say something, or is it just accidentally? Jane?
Sorry, that was not deliberate. Let me try to figure out how to put that down. Sorry about that.
Just click it again.
Oh, okay.
Okay, anyone, any comments, questions for Daphne? Seems not the case. So then, again, Daphne, so this is the Loop Subcommittee. Daphne, you're muted.
We didn't hold our meeting in May as we'd originally planned because, unfortunately, one of our members, who is also a 20-year past president of GABA, was hit by a motorcycle as he was riding his bike, and he's very seriously injured and in hospital. So we're deferring our meeting until June, when hopefully we'll be able to get back to dealing with some of the issues of the loop. Any of the comments that you have tonight, I'll certainly take forward, and I have made notes about the comments that two of our guests here made tonight. So we'll be discussing that in the future at some of our meetings. Thank you.
Evan has some comment or question? You're muted, Evan. You're muted.
Okay. Yeah, I have a feedback on the loop. Can you take that, Daphne?
Uh-huh.
Your committee. So I went on the new Sunset Links just to try out. You know, it's still semi-closed to traffic, but I had a look at the bicycle access there. And if you're coming from the Santa Cruz path, you can only get access the north side of river, the river path. And if you're coming from the other direction, there is a way to get down. They made a path to get down from Sunset Links from river down to the south side. If you want to cross over, you have to like cross Sunset in the middle, and there's no like setup for that. So there's a little opening in the concrete barrier. That's the only way to cross that. And it's a double yellow line right there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Probably too late now, but.
Yeah. You know, I'm interested that occurred because I was sure that we had input into that, but thank you very much. I'll have a look at that.
Okay.
Good. Anyone else for Loop Subcommittee? So this brings us next to CSCC, James Wood.
Yeah, thanks. Just one update. We approved the round three of the mini grants program. For those who are not familiar, it's just neighborhoods and individuals, if they get enough signatures, can apply for traffic calming measures. This is specifically only for traffic calming measures, so speed humps, chicanes, that kind of thing. And every year they get a list of projects, and then they rank them based on several metrics, and then they present to the CSCC and say, should we approve this money? And we approved the monies for this previous round. This is the third year, I'm pretty sure, and it's been a big hit. They are getting more and more applications. So there was some talk about asking these sorts of grants to be a larger budget item. It's capped to I don't know the specific amount on the top of my head, but it's not a lot of money. It's like maybe you can, maybe $1 million for all of them or something like that. Anyway, there was some talk about, because of the popularity of it, asking the city to make this a more permanent, larger budget item. And then I guess briefly, we did end up funding. I said this at the previous meeting, but Lydia would know more about this. But there's we did approve the $1 million for the sidewalk funding repairs, conditional on some of the members wanted to be presented some additional information about, you know, which projects, stuff like that. But it's a drop water in a big bucket, but we did approve that. And that's, oh, and the final news was, and I need more details on this because this was said at the end, apparently sitting in the April 21st meeting, city council, mayor and council approved something to make some of the funds of the RTA Next to make the CSCC be a reviewing body in a similar way that we are a reviewing body for the Prop 411 funds, for the Prop 411 safety funds. And so obviously this is going to be a small chunk of the RTA money, but it's going to be some, which was obviously welcome news. We didn't have the full plans on that, but I can report back when that becomes more clear. And that is my CSCC update.
Thank you. Any comments, question for James? Not the case. So get to item number 5, which is announcements, updates, and questions for staff. First one is the City of Tucson. Lydia.
Everyone, good evening. Yes, I will be talking a little bit about the sidewalk prioritization that we got approved through the CSCC. So that's the next agenda item. I have two quick updates. We have some upcoming public events that if you're interested in attending or live in the area, we would love to see you out there. The first one, there's two on May 30th. And the first one is Columbus Boulevard. It's a modernization project, which includes bike lane enhancements, sidewalk repairs, and repaving. And that will be at McCormick Park at 9:30 a.m. We also, on May 30th, have the Fairview Avenue project. Similar scope, so we're repaving, adding some enhanced bike lanes. And that is also at 9:30 a.m. at the Jacobs YMCA. I can follow up with an email if folks are interested too with the postcards for those. So if anyone is interested in coming to those events, getting some free food, meeting people in person, it's a fun opportunity. I guess my second update was the sidewalk repair, so I will save that for the next agenda item. But I'm happy to take questions.
Questions, anyone? Good. Thank you, Lydia. So then we come next to Pima County, Mike Hendricks.
Hi, all. Just a couple of updates, a couple of our projects which involve some bicycle and pedestrian improvements. Valencia Road is coming very soon to a completion point in the sense of the design. So we anticipate construction to, I believe, happen in 2027. I know we've talked about it here before, but that will include some the county's first protected intersections. So that should be exciting. This month, we've also, or next month, we'll be wrapping up the Houghton multi-use path on the southeast side between Camino El Toro and Sarita Road. So that should be a good project as well. It's just a pathway along the side of a road. And one thing, kind of a announcement, but also to go ahead and alert any bicyclists who are going up to Mount Lemmon on the approach into Summerhaven. The county has recently installed some temporary speed cushions, is what they call. They're preformed rubber. There are gaps in them so that if you are coming into town and you are on a bicycle, you can go ahead and avoid them. But they are signed as well, and they also have reflective markings on them. This is a demonstration project. We're trying to get perspective from everyone. So if you do ride up there on the mountain and you have some comments, good, bad, or ugly, please please feel free to reach out to me or the county in general. We're this is a honest to God demonstration project. We want to know. We want to hear everything. So that's all my announcements.
Thank you, Mike. Any question, comments? Okay, the next is Marana update. David, Daphne?
Yeah, wait, sorry. Mike, I'm yeah. very interested about the speed cushions. As yeah. you know, I'm president of the Mount Lemmon Bikeway Coalition, and we're very interested in the safety on the whole highway. Why were these Absolutely. Deemed necessary to put in?
What's the issue? So it was, we were looking at the speeds on that, and the speeds coming into Summerhaven, it's right after Ski Run Road. I believe they were really high. They were about like 35, 36, 37 miles per hour.
So on the downhill.
On the downhill. Section.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so that's primarily where they are. The reason why we're doing them as these kind of preformed devices is that we want to go ahead and be able to have the ability to pull them up in the winter so that they don't get damaged by the snow plows. And the reason why we didn't make them full on speed humps is because of it's the classification of the roadway. It's a collector roadway that's going in there. So it's we wanted like emergency vehicles to be able to travel over there with minimal disturbance on it.
Right.
Does that answer?
Do you know what the width of the gap is between the two cushions?
Yeah, it ranges, but we aimed for like 3 to 4 feet.
Oh, okay. That. Well, that's significant. Yeah.
We wanted to, you know, we were balancing the difference between not having drivers try and avoid them. So, so sometimes we actually have a cushion in the shoulder, and really the reason has nothing to do with bicyclists. It has just to try and make sure that, you know, vehicles stay on in their lane. Yeah. Right. So let me know. If you and I figured GABA also would probably have folks who are capable of going up there. Anyone, give us comments. We want to hear them.
Capable of going up there. Okay. we'll get the word out and get some comments back too.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thanks.
Anyone else for Mike? Good. And next is the Marana update. David Andrews.
Yeah, hi, this is Bob Stinson with the Town of Marana. Only update we have currently is that our Tangerine Road is still coming along. We do have the multi-use path that'll be on predominantly on the north side of that. And eventually when the next phase of the RTA kicks in, we'll have that second phase built that will connect to all the way over to Dove Mountain, Twin Peaks area. So it's going to be a little bit of time, but we are moving forward on that.
Thank you. Any question, comments? Good. And Pag for Hannah Odin. Anyone here? No? Okay, so then we go to Oro Valley, and that would be Krista Post, but she's also out. Anyone on Oro Valley? Good, then that concludes item number 5. And we come to item number 6, and this would be Lydia again, continuing regarding the sidewalks and related.
I'm just going to share my screen here. Let me know. Everyone can see that, okay?
Now it's on.
Okay, wonderful. So yeah, like James mentioned, the team at the Department of Transportation and Mobility came to the CSC with sidewalk repair request. I'll talk a bit about, you know, we kind of narrowed some of the repairs that we needed. $1 million sounds like a lot, but for concrete repairs, it can go a long way if you kind of have a framework that works for that amount of money. So we first talked about this kind of data that we already have. So we had some LIDAR data from 2015 that gives us a really good sense of where we have sidewalk gaps. For this request, however, so that is a, you know, as important but separate kind of issue and thing that we're working on as a city. But what we kind of wanted to focus on for this specific request is what we call spot repairs. So these are spots in the sidewalk that maybe present a tripping hazard. So maybe the concrete is lifted somewhere, or there's a large crack. So what we did here is we realized that we have this really good data from our 311, right? This is kind of our request portal that people use when some repairs are needed in a specific location. So we have specific locations of these areas that are maybe presenting tripping hazards for people, particularly those using mobility devices. So we also have images typically of these requests. So we just have really good data currently to identify where these spot issues are and go out there and do these repairs. One thing I'll note too is, you know, the city, when we have a known tripping hazard, and then so people, and if there is an incident, we are as a city liable to pay any injuries. So by using the data that we already have and using this funding to repair those needed spot repairs, we're saving a lot of money in the long run. And we're also improving pedestrian accessibility and safety for everyone using our sidewalks. So we started by pulling all of that data from 311. We are focusing specifically on those larger streets, so collectors and arterials. And this is because we know that pedestrian use is higher in these areas. They connect with key destinations. We have all of our we have a lot of our transit facilities going through these areas. So we wanted to focus on our major streets and routes, which is our collector and arterials. The other map layer that you see here is our equity priority index. So this looks at things like access to a private vehicle. We look at income, kind of a lot of those indicators that we use to prioritize these requests. So this is the framework that was presented and approved by the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. This is actually a lot of this framework is taken from the Safe Streets mini grant. So this is kind of a familiar framework for the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. So we really heavily weigh equity using that equity priority index. We consider safety. So we look at things like history of crashes. If the person reporting is a self-reported ADA user, if they use a wheelchair or walker, for example, we're looking at the existing environment. So, you know, is this spot location close to a hospital or a school or a grocery store, things like that. We also look at date of complaint. So if it's an older complaint, it would get a little bit more points. We also look at proximity to those transit facilities. So I'll switch over now to, we actually gave the CCC two presentations. They wanted us to come back a second time to actually run those lists. There was about 300 requests. They wanted to run those requests through the prioritization framework to see where we would be prioritizing. So I'll pull up that map as well so we can take a look at where some of those hotspots are. So after running through the prioritization framework, you can see these kind of large purple circles here are where they scored the highest in that framework. So this is where, and we're kind of in conversations with our streets crew. We're looking at potentially contracting out this work as well, just based on City of Tucson crew capacity. So this is kind of where along those collector and arterial streets that we would be prioritizing those spot repairs based on things like equity, proximity to key destinations, safety, and all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, we were awarded $1 million in funding in the next few months after we kind of talk with our streets crew and figure out how we're going to tackle all of these. Using that funding, we're going to go back to the CSCC and present to them next steps. And that could look like, you know, maybe we start by tackling those tier one spot repairs and any of those nearby, just so we're making sure that we're being efficient with, you know, when we get crews out there, if there's, you know, maybe a tier two or three nearby, we would have the crews go out and also fix that one. So we're kind of in conversations about logistics for how this is going to actually be implemented. But I think this approval is going to be really impactful for people to see that, you know, when they make those requests, the city comes out and makes those repairs. Yeah, happy to take any questions. Sorry if you can hear my dog with his squeaky toy.
Thank you, Lydia. Any questions, comments? Seems not to be the case. So, thank you. So I don't know to what extent, Lydia, you are allowed to share those, send those around to the committee.
Oh, the presentations?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, I can certainly send those around.
Yeah. Thank you. Good. So then we come to item number 8, which is, item number 7, recommendations for continuous loop improvements. So this would still be Daphne. I don't know whether this was a separate item or already addressed, but please, Daphne.
Yeah, no, this was a separate item because I had sent out a letter for people to look at. The letter was drafted by the member that I mentioned who just had the unfortunate collision. And this is something based on work that he and I had done many years ago when we first started looking at the loop together and identifying safety features that we felt needed to be addressed. So I hope everyone's had a chance to look at the letter, and please don't be alarmed by the fact that in the opening paragraph it mentions that this has already been discussed with the BAC. It was a draft letter, and if the committee here endorses it tonight, then it will be sent on to the Loop Advisory Committee. Safety is always a chief concern, and this has been broken down into 3 categories here: user safety, user convenience, and capital improvements. These are meant to be a point of a beginning point for a discussion. This letter then would be sent to the Pima County Parks and Rec Advisory Commission with recommendations for them to take some action on this. But hopefully we would have more details to go with that after we've had discussion tonight and through other means. So I'm open to any comments from the committee as to any amendments you'd like to see, or what specific details under each of these categories you think are concerning and need to be addressed. Anyone?
Daphne, do you want to throw the letter on the screen?
I don't have that here with me. Sorry. As you know, I'm coming to you by satellite in France, and I don't have the letter to put up on the screen. Sorry. I don't have all my files.
Lydia, would you be able? Otherwise, I could try.
Yeah, let me just download it, and I can pull it up.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
None of these should come as a surprise to anyone. I think it's a case where we have to keep bringing items forward for consideration by staff. So, all right, here we have the recommendations for continuous or ongoing improvements to the loop pathway. User safety recommendations aim to reduce the likelihood of incidents and enhance emergency response capabilities. User convenience recommendations seek to improve comfort, clarity, and overall user experience. And capital improvements involve long-term infrastructure investments intended to strengthen the loop's continuity, capacity, and functionality. So under user safety, the first ones, improve tight corners, such as right angle and acute right angle turns, to reduce collision risk and enhance visibility. And before everyone jumps in, I personally wanted to see more specific examples location-wise to help explain what is meant by that. So second, does anyone have a comment? I think primarily these ones on tight corners, from my personal experience, tend to be at some of the underpasses where you actually go into a tunnel or under a roadway, and you know, there's a sharp turn to get into that, so that there isn't much visibility before you're actually in the underpass. Second point, improve safety in congested areas, including narrow bridges and underpasses. Again, definitely, I think that's something we can all agree with. Third one is install mile markers with path identification on all loop segments and integrate them with 911 access points through coordinated interagency planning. The idea of having a location identifier for people that need to call for help or need to call a friend or a family member to come and pick them up, that's been discussed for many years now, and it's something we're still putting forward as something we'd like to see. More interestingly enough, more recently, my husband had some personal experience where he was asked to call 911 because there'd been a crash by a cyclist on the loop, and the emergency response were able to triangulate his position through his phone geo-coordinates. So they are using technology to a greater degree now to identify people that call 911. But it's still an issue that if you were to call a family member to come and pick you up because, you know, you'd had flats or couldn't go any further, for the most part, if you're not familiar with the loop, you'd have difficulty identifying where you were. So that's what that point's meant to address. Number four, promote appropriate and consistent use of movable signs to ensure they provide clear guidance.
James just put a hand up.
James?
Oh, I could have waited, but I just meant, and I don't know if this, I'd be curious to hear what you say about this. When we've been talking about the loop safety in the past, and when we have talked to the sheriff's office and TBD, in so many words, they essentially said they don't really have the manpower to patrol these areas. And I was wondering if it's appropriate to sort of request that to be otherwise, or if this is the right form for that, you know, because it's sort of under user safety, you know, if they were able to patrol it, I don't know, maybe some of these things could be addressed.
I'm glad you raised that point, because I've been aware that I haven't seen any of the pathway patrollers out there for a long time. And I'm talking about the Pima County Sheriff's Auxiliary Pathway Patrol. I've heard from some other people that apparently they've been losing members, they're having trouble recruiting, that there's generally poor morale. Personally, I would like to see that Auxiliary Pathway Patrol back in full force. They don't have an enforcement function. They can't do that, but they can certainly be a visible presence. They can identify trends and issues they see occurring on an ongoing basis. They can, you know, by their very presence there, perhaps defuse any situations or issues that arise, and they can immediately call for help if they need to have that. So I am very interested in seeing that brought back up to, you know, a higher level of use, and it's one thing I'm going to be pursuing. So thank you. The issue of the movable signs in point number four. I've been aware that there is some concern with staff in the Parks and Recreation Department that there perhaps are too many signs on the loop pathway, and so perhaps a reluctance to put up any more permanent signs. One of the other problems with having permanent signs, for example, telling people to slow down, be careful, you know, call out your pass, is that after a while, people no longer see them. They've been there, they become part of the background furniture, and they're no longer doing anything to remind people. So there is a thought that we might use sort of small sandwich board signs that are put out and moved around from location to location. You know, they're only a short-term thing in one location, then moved on. By the very nature of their transients, people notice them more and are likely to, you know, take note of the message on them. So that's one thing that we're trying to see if we can have implemented. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on that. Encourage faster repair response times, definitely. There's been quite a bit of chat on social media recently about some of the patching and resurfacing that's been ongoing on various sections of the loop, most notably, I think, on the Rito section. Apparently, a previous contractor had been doing some of the transverse crack sealing, and they were very bumpy. And so they've hired a different contractor to go in and repair and fix those bumpy cracks. And my personal experience the day I was out when they were just starting to do that was that they were doing a much better job and that they're significantly reduced the bumps. Unfortunately, that same day I came across a crew that was doing some overall pavement preservation, but they were just spraying the asphalt over the bumps and not removing the bumps initially. So I think there has to be some better coordination there. But if anybody identifies any area with what they consider to be poor maintenance or sections that need repair work, please let me know and I'll pass that on. Number six, consistent standardized pavement striping. Again, there have been a whole variety of pavement markings out there, I think because it's been done over time, over a number of years, and we really should be having standardized markings for the safety. Number seven, again, one that I know I had done and I report on many years ago, the bollards that are on the loop pathway. Now, obviously, at some entrance points where the pathway crosses roads and where we do not want motor vehicles on the loop, there may be a need for bollards, but there are some other locations where I think bollards have simply been left in place where they don't serve any obvious function. And so we'd like to have a review of all of those bollards to remove any that are not deemed necessary, but seem to have an obstacle concern. So if you've got any comments on that in your days out riding, I'd like to hear about those. Also considering the fact that people have trailers and some of the recumbent bikes have a difficult time negotiating around the bollards. James, do you have another question?
Slight concern about the temporary signs. Do you think that people will just take them or remove them? And if not, I was curious about if you had an idea of who would be doing the cycling of locations, etc.
Yeah, no, those are both very good points, and that's part of what we'll be looking at. Thank you. Okay, user convenience. Removing the humps on overpasses east of Campbell. fairly obvious. Number two, add names to the overpasses where they're currently absent. Not all of them have the names of the streets, and I think we've been asking for that for a while, but that should be a fairly easy improvement to make. Number three, identify and remove unnecessary or confusing signage to improve wayfinding and reduce visual clutter. This sort of refers to what I was saying before about the thought that maybe there are existing signs that people just no longer register because they've been there for too long. But all of it should make sure that it is actually doing good wayfinding for people that are using it. Number four, evaluate recent improvements and get feedback from users to see what you think about them. The most recent one is the path connecting Dodge. When you're coming up to Dodge, instead of, you know, only having to turn right, cross the Dodge Bridge, and then turn left to continue along the path, you can now go straight over and follow the pathway along over to Prince. Number five, ensure that all water faucets are compatible with standard water bottles and provide cold water at all rest areas. Fairly self-obvious. So, capital improvements. Construct an underpass on the east side of Congress to connect the northern and southern sections of the loop, eliminating a major gap. Widen or reconfigure narrow bridges and underpasses to reduce congestion and improve safety. And finally, implement a mile marker system with consistent path identification. So these are all, as mentioned, for major capital improvements and would be a longer term project. But if those or any others are ones that you feel would be necessary to improve the overall experience, I'd be very happy to hear that. So, John.
Yes, thank you. This is a really great list, Daphne. I'd wanted to say on capital improvements, has there been any discussion in looking into areas of the loop that are maybe under-facilitated? And by that, I mean there's kind of stretches that don't have, for example, water fountains or restrooms for long sections versus other sections that are in town that are much more, they're much more frequently available. And that could be a capital improvement, a suggestion as well.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. One thing I was going to ask members here, not at every stop point, but at some of them, there have been sort of tool stations where there are some basic tools provided. Over time, most of those have been stolen. The stations are still existing, but they haven't been repaired or replenished. What is your feeling as cyclists? I mean, do you honestly feel that those are useful to you, or do you feel that they could be removed entirely? John?
If no one else wants to take a stab at it, I think that they're useful. I have not used the ones on the loop personally, but there is the repair station that's on Mount Lemmon. There's one at Molino Basin, and I find that one is very useful. Especially because somebody, you know, making their way up the mountain may not have, you know, all their supplies with them, et cetera. So I think that to the extent that they can be maintained, I think it's a worthwhile goal, especially because if someone's, you know, venturing out further on the loop than they might have done before, it's good to be able to make them feel like they're, you know, that they have access to those things if they need it, especially because there really isn't a lot of services or shops that are readily accessible off the loop at most points. I mean, we had the shop that was near Camino del Cerro that was open briefly, but that's no longer there. I think it is a good thing, although I recognize that theft is obviously always going to be a problem with that.
Thank you. Are there any other comments on the letter as a whole? Okay. Would this committee be prepared to endorse that and send it along to the Loop subcommittee? From there, I would take it forward to the Parks and Rec Advisory Commission. Summer.
Yeah, I just had a quick question about the underpass language and sidewalk improvement. Do underpasses include the train bridges? Is that considered an underpass?
Well, I don't know what you mean by a train bridge.
The train bridges, so when you are traveling west on Speedway, there's train bridges that go over that run east to west. Are the train bridges considered underpasses?
Yeah, underpasses under both roadways and railway tracks, yeah. And anything that goes underneath.
I just didn't know what the definition was because it's not like they're joined. They're just two thin kind of bridges.
Yeah, and anywhere that the Loop pathway goes underneath something else rather than going over it, crossing it, we would call it an underpass. Does that help you?
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Does anyone...
Ingmar?
Yeah, does anyone wants to make a motion that we vote to endorse this letter? I mean, Daphne, is that a potential next step, right?
Yes, please.
Yes. So would anyone like to make a motion to vote on this letter?
I'll make the motion to approve the letter.
And does anyone would like to second that motion? Okay. Robert, you had your hand raised, or you also just wanted a second? Good. So then everyone who is in favor, say aye or raise your hand.
Aye.
Okay. Everyone who is against? Okay. Let's first wait until all the in favor pop up. Is anyone against? I don't see anyone being against. Robert, you still have your hand up, I think. And does anyone would like to abstain? Robert Smith, do you still want to say something because your hand is up?
I don't think it's shouldn't be up. Raise your hand. Lower your hand.
It was just down and now it's up again. Please remove it.
Okay.
No, it's okay.
What is it now?
Now it's gone. So it's good. So I ask again, is anyone against the letter? I don't see anyone. Does anyone would like to abstain? So then I call this a unanimous vote in favor of the letter. And thank you, Daphne, for putting all the work in. Yeah.
Thank you very much. If you would then send the letter to me with a CC to Anita Kelman, the chair of the Pima County Parks and Rec Advisory Commission, that would be excellent.
Say it again, Daphne. Lydia and I should now forward the letter, or what do you want us to do?
Yes, if you could forward the letter officially to me as chair of the Loop subcommittee. GABA sent their letter to me, and so then I will be making a report and forwarding it to, or taking it to the Parks and Rec Advisory Commission. Very complicated.
So what does it specifically mean? We just email you again the letter you emailed to us, or we need to put it on letter?
Yes, with the motion.
Okay.
So that I have that? Official record that you have been voted consulted. Okay. Yeah,
good.
Thank you.
We will do that. Okay. Thank you very much, Daphne.
You're welcome.
Anyone else on that topic? Good. Then let's move to agenda item number 8. So there's a city update potentially on the project proposals Kingstone Rosewood Boulevard and John Edgett. wanted to say something here. Am I correct, John?
I had asked if we could get an update from the city on this project. So I'm not sure if there is any info if we maybe need to move that to a future meeting if that's something that needs to be looked into more. I don't know if Lydia was here last time, perhaps. So that may be why.
Okay. Thank you, John. Lydia, are you able to inquire whether in a future meeting someone would?
Yeah, I'd be happy to get someone or just prepare myself to speak on the sure. project.
That's also good.
Yeah, but we can definitely table that for next month.
Okay, let's do that. Thank you. Since we added, anyone, some comment on that particular agenda item? Not the case. Okay, so then item number 9, this would be standardizing requests that we make. James Wood had some comments on that, or I don't know what it was, more like a request to, yeah, James, please voice yourself. Just, let's see where we
go. It was somebody half-baked, you know, I thought it would be a nice conversation to have. This falls under the umbrella of thinking about ways this committee could be more effective, if we should be more effective. I don't know. I guess we can comment on that. And it was just more a thought of a lot of the public comment we get very understandably, and maybe the reason some of you joined was, you know, blank road is unsafe to bike on. You know, this road is in bad repair, and I'm sure the city gets a million of these, and we get the ones associated with bicycle and pedestrian. Over time, I've noticed that sometimes these somehow fall off the hierarchy and we actually do write a letter. The Dodge on the loop was the Dodge Road is a great example of that, these improvements. But sometimes they're kind of one-off comments that that sort of fall by the wayside, and I feel a little bad about that. And so I was wondering if it's worth our time to try to standardize these comments in a way that we could pass them on better. Or, you know, for example, last week, or maybe it was two meetings ago, there was someone made a comment about somewhere in the Northeast. Can't really remember where, and I can't remember, so that's maybe a reason to do it. In my head, there are sort of, I mean, maybe this is as simple as a list that we just keep and we sort of refer back to, and if we get repeat comments, that can sort of boost it up, and maybe eventually we would write something to the city. In my mind, I had sort of two reasons, or, you know, so I expressed the reasons to do it. The reasons not to do anything are maybe it's unrealistic or unsustainable. If none of us are going to do this, then why bother? Second reason is we're doing fine as we are. I think this is something I was reminded of, like, we have done some stuff, so we're not useless. And so maybe we're doing okay. Third, maybe it wouldn't be effective. This list just becomes a list. And so the final reason is we, as a committee, we don't want to be the self-licking ice cream cone in a matter of speaking, which is to say, we don't want to do something whose purpose is to justify us doing that thing. And so if it's kind of going to end up like that, I don't think there's a reason to do anything. But this is meant to be just open. People have comments if we're doing anything should be changed, improved, etc. Daphne?
Well, James, I think it is a very good idea. And I think that over the years that I've been on the committee, different chairpersons have had different styles in writing or formatting letters. Typically, as in writing any report, you want to have your key point right at the beginning. So my recommendation, what I have seen us do, you know, over the period of years, they're most effective where we have the first statement saying the BAC recommends ABC, you know, recommends that improvements be made on route whatever, recommends that a report be done on whatever. Then right after that is maybe a two-line statement explaining what the BAC is, you know, Tucson, Pima County Bicycle Advisory Committee is a committee appointed by whatever to consult and provide advice on cycling issues. And then following that would be some of the description of what the issue is and any details that we feel are substantive to backing up our request. So first off, the statement of what we recommend or what we request. Secondly, just a couple of lines saying who we are, and then the detail of it. Then always, always, always ask for a follow-up or a response or an acknowledgement as your final statement. Because without that, you know, yeah. Lydia knows it can be ignored.
Yeah, that's great feedback. I appreciate that. So yeah, that would be sort of, if we get to the point of writing a letter, this is a good template to follow. The other feedback I was interested in is, you know, what we do before the letter actually gets attempted to be written, because we get a lot of public comments, and some which get addressed, some don't. Obviously, can't be addressing everything. I mean, but yeah.
No, I think just to follow up, Ingmar, before you take over, I think some of the comments from the public that we get here, part of our role is to assess whether those are serious enough to be taken forward to staff or to the higher levels. I mean, that's partly our role to discuss that, to look over and see if we think that we need to pass that along. Staff are seeing those comments come in anyhow, so if you know, independently, if they choose to follow up on it, that's very good. But we as a committee, as an advisory body, have an obligation to consider that. And if it's serious, then we send it forward with a recommendation for action on it. Or at this meeting, we can request staff to come back to us with some background on it so that we can then make an informed decision.
More?
Yeah, so I like what Daphne said about the standardized letter. So I wonder whether we have that, and I mean, kind of, if we don't, we could make it. And the other aspect, which we had discussed in the past, certainly people looking at it beforehand. So basically, one person writing it, whether we are allowed to have it as a Google Doc and everyone can already comment pre-meeting. And then we can primarily vote and discuss it. I mean, I remember we had some times where we went word by word and the whole committee, and then it was picked up a month after again. So that's rather tedious. I mean, ideally, if someone takes on writing the letter, and then we have a Google Doc where everyone can, even pre-meeting, leave their comments. And I don't know whether that is against bylaws that people put comments into a common document. Presumably not, right? Do we know?
I don't think there's any problem with that. That's part of our consultation. But I think any time in the past that we've actually sent letters forward, we've had the discussion at this meeting, and the person presenting the issue usually presents the letter in a draft form. Amendments can be made, but then the chairperson or our secretary can then modify it if it's not already written in the format that I just suggested, you know, stating the first line with the recommendation, then the comment about the advisory body, and then the request at the end for, you know, follow-up or acknowledgement. That can be put on after, and those things don't need to be voted on. That's simply formatting. The body of the letter is what the proposal the proponent usually brings forward to this meeting, and we discuss and either adopt or modify.
So anyone else on the topic? So let's only, I mean, try to be even more efficient. So I think Daphne gave a very nice example. She basically came with something in. We saw it beforehand, and it was voted on rather quickly. So, yeah. Other thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's really an action item to be had here. It was more of us interested in people's thoughts, and we can certainly implement the suggestions going forward. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, James. Anyone else on that item? Good. And item number 10. So there's a discussion on protected bike lanes, recommendations for Tucson. Eric Post, do you want to take over right away? Eric, are you here?
Yeah, I'm ready to go. So there's a few things to think about when we are installing certain kinds of bike lanes. And this was triggered by a recent lawsuit up in Washington, in Seattle. And the city of Seattle ended up paying out over $9 million for a bicyclist who was seriously injured in a protected bike lane. And it had to do with the design of the bike lane, and there were some flaws and errors made in the design, and that's something that we might want to consider here. Up until recently, I thought of right hooks in three categories. The first category would be the motorist overtakes the cyclist and makes a right turn. The second category would be traffic's backed up, the cyclist is coming along in a bike shoulder or a bike lane, and the motorist decides they're going to make a right turn, so it's the cyclist overtaking. A third category is where they're side by side, maybe at a red light, light turns green, they both go forward, motorist makes a right turn. This lawsuit raises the awareness of a fourth kind of right hook, which I'll call a blind right hook. And it's a scenario where the cyclist has the right of way, the motorist is allowed to make a right turn, but neither can see each other until it's too late. So this is a particular design where the protected bike lane is between the curb and the parked cars. And so you have a sidewalk, you have a curb, you have a protected bike lane, you have parked cars, and then you have through traffic in the driving lanes. And somewhere along here, the parking stops and there's a side street or an entrance to a business, and a vehicle is allowed to make a right turn. The driver does not have good clear visibility of anybody in the bike lane, and the bike lane may not have awareness of a driver turning. And that's exactly what happened in this situation. The article title that said that judge ordered the city to pay is a little bit misleading. What occurred in this is the city had some ordinances to follow. One of which is site distance, and the requirement for the city was 125 feet of site distance. They didn't have that. They had about 44 feet where these two could see each other. A human factors expert will tell you that you need a certain amount of time to observe, realize there's a danger, analyze, react. And then once you've done what you're going to do, pull the brakes, swerve, there's time that it takes for the maneuver to be executed. And so you need about a second and a half, probably, maybe a little longer. At 12 miles an hour, you're covering about 17 feet per second. So we're eating up that 44 feet really, really, really fast. And that was a factor in this crash. What saddens me a little bit is that Seattle adopted the Vision Zero program. And they had hoped to have it fully implemented, I think, by the year 2030, somewhere in there. And what saddens me a little bit is that in the lawsuit, the Vision Zero program was brought in as an allegation that, hey, you're not doing the job right. You're moving towards Vision Zero, and you don't have site distances. You don't have the engineering that you need to make this safe. And I'm kind of sad because I think Vision Zero is a good program. Now, a couple of other failures that occurred in the engineering here is that the city had considered this turn, and they had considered reducing or restricting the parking near the turn, which would have helped with the site distance. but they decided not to restrict the parking. And as it turns out, according to the order from the judge, which was available, and according to other sources in this lawsuit, it turns out they didn't have any analysis or reason for not restricting the parking. In other words, somebody arbitrarily made the decision, nah, let's not restrict parking. Well, you can't really do that. If you're going to have some engineering, you have to have some engineering reasons for what you're going to do. I want to mention that there are certain immunities that cities and governments have, especially here in Arizona. One immunity is if you follow standards, engineering standards, at the time that you build something, and that would be AASHTO, that would be MUTCD, which is actually the law in Arizona, because that's been adopted. If you're following engineering standards, you may have some immunity if there's an allegation later that there's a roadway defect. So in this particular case, I don't know if they had that immunity in Washington, but they did not follow the standards. They deviated from AASHTO a little bit as well. There may also be, in some circumstances, a discretion or discretionary immunity, where if government officials have some discretion, a firefighter can go east instead of west or go west instead of east, and they go west and it's the wrong decision. Well, guess what? You know, they have the discretion to do that. In this particular case, in Washington, there was no discretion. There was an ordinance on the site distance that they must do it. And so they didn't get to use that immunity. Another immunity might be a recreational use immunity if you're, you know, out at the Saguaro National Park or something like that, and you're there for recreation, you may have some, there may be some immunities there that protect the government agency. In this case, it's not recreation, it's transportation. You're on this protected bike lane to go somewhere. So what had happened is the city of Seattle had filed a motion. They call it a motion for summary judgment. It's a motion to try and say, hey, look, you know, we have these immunities. We followed these rules and we shouldn't be sued. And so their motion failed. The judge ruled on that. And because the motion failed for the city, they ended up, facing this verdict. There are no punitive damages against the government. If you want to allege that the behavior was so bad they should be punished, that's what a punitive damage is. Those are only against private corporations and individuals. Those aren't something against governments. So this $9 million was really for the injury. It's a brain injury. The bicyclist was wearing a helmet, and the bicyclist was pretty well trained. It was not a casual rider. It was somebody who'd been in a cycling club and had been involved in some competition. So somebody that kind of knew what they were doing and just got caught out. Comment on this $9 million is that some health insurance carriers are allowed to be paid back for what they've paid. In the future, Medicare may have to take over in the future on a case like this. Right now, Medicare doesn't have future rights, but they're working on it. And so a lot of times a judgment like that gets eaten up a bit. Now, I want to bring it home to Tucson. I thought I saw one or two bike lanes or routes with striped shoulders installed between parked cars and curbs in Tucson. If we have that, we need to really think about how safe they are. I do recall there was discussion about this, I believe on University Avenue, when the trolley streetcar tracks were going in. And ultimately, it was rejected, and the idea of having the cyclists between the parked cars and the curb did not occur. And so thank you for that. I am concerned that there was discussion, and I saw a plan at one point for the Broadway corridor where the cyclist is directed up onto the sidewalk behind the bus bench. And the idea here is to keep the cyclist and the buses separated so you're not bunny hopping all the way down and passing each other as sometimes occurs. So when the bus is pulled over, the cyclist is actually directed up onto the sidewalk around the bus bench and then directed back into the roadway. This is of particular concern to me because at least one of the drawings that I saw, the cyclist is directed back into the roadway about where there's a turn into a business. And this is now a blind right hook scenario. But more importantly, it's one where the cyclist is directed into the roadway at about the place where the driver is going to start making a right turn. And if we go through with that, my prediction is it's going to bite. So I toss this out just as a thought that we want to follow really good engineering standards, and we want to really think about what we're doing with bicyclists. Are we just trying to avoid conflict with traffic and shuffling the cyclists somewhere else? Or are we really, really, really thinking about the safety of the cyclist and what people need to do to avoid hitting each other? And I think the latter is more important. And that's about all I have to say if there's any questions. But Daphne, you brought up an issue about contractors, and it just occurred to me that contractors are not trained much in bicycle law. They're trained a little bit to follow contractor rules and things like that. And you're absolutely right. They go out there and they do things and they're not thinking about the bicyclist. And I want to follow up on that another time. But does anybody have any questions on this engineering thing or how this right hook crash occurred or how it applies to Tucson?
Thank you, John. I just quickly put in the chat the photo that you had sent, so for everyone to see partially what you're talking about. Thank you. And Daphne, I think, has come.
Just very quickly, I put in the chat that Sarnoff, I think, it's an example where we have bike lanes that are on one side of the road. They're between the curb and the parking lane, and then they switch on the other side of the road, or even they switch going down in the next block. Quite apart from, you know, your comments, Eric, about the danger of that configuration, which I agree with you, is the fact that you've got them changing from one side of the road to the other, or even within two blocks on the same road. Very confusing for both the motorists and the cyclists. So I really think that we need to review that and do a better job of being consistent with our design.
Yeah, I agree.
When you say Sarnoff, where exactly? Or do you have more information? I'm just Googling it. Is that Cross Street or something?
Broadway to... I forget what the next one is. For the next two blocks down from Broadway running south, we've had quite a bit of discussion here at this committee about this project. Lydia will remember asking about the bollards that were placed there, but also about the configuration and the alternating nature of it.
Yeah,
it runs right past. Go ahead, Lydia.
Yeah, sorry, I was going to say the main intersection of that project is at Sarnoff and Kenyon. Kenyon. So if you start at that intersection, you can kind of see. I could also post the project website in the chat if that would be helpful.
Mike?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, actually. I used to work in the city of Seattle and Washington State
And so I remember seeing this come across the Seattle Times. I think this is a evolving area of bicycle engineering, and as the guides such as the NACTO Urban Bikeway Design Guide, the revision of the ASHTO Bike Guide come up, you know, obviously designing a bike facility when I started doing engineering was essentially paving 6 feet extra on each side of the roadway and putting in a 6-inch white line. That has since changed. And I think, you know, we're kind of in this place where, like many things, things have gotten complicated, and engineers should be definitely much more in the weeds than just referring to their manuals. And I think, honestly, this is one of the things that, you know, this is kind of those checks and balances. Unfortunately, I did read the story about the young man, and it's absolutely tragic what he's gone through. And I know I'm working on a project and working with some of our less experienced engineers, we do discuss a lot of these issues as well. And I don't think that things like this should slow down our implementation of facilities that invite a more inclusive group of people to use those facilities. And I think, you know, and I think that's borne out by the PAG counts that we do, where we're starting to see more women, more children going out and using these facilities. It's no longer the 20 to 30 year old men in Lycra. I know personally, and I'm sure all of us enjoy, I know I ride the Third Street University route, and it's always enjoyable to see cargo bikes and kids and other folks using that route. And I think that kind of these updated facilities that we're getting, we need to be cautious, but we need to go ahead and continue that because we're opening up our transportation system to be more inclusive. And I think that's a great goal that we should be doing. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. Thank you.
Anyone else on the topic? So are there more specific things we can and should do now? John, do you have any suggestions? Should we write a letter? Should we reach out to someone more specifically? Is this...
Sorry, you were asking me specifically, Ingmar?
Yeah, I mean, I ask everyone, but I didn't hear from anyone. So in case do you have any thoughts of what to do next besides discussing among us? Thank you again for the background. I mean, should we write a letter to someone, or is it? Mm-hmm.
I think that was Eric, I believe, that was speaking on. Yeah.
Stephanie?
Yeah, no, it was Eric's comment. I'm not sure if we need to write a letter right now. I think this is another reason why I've asked in the past if we can have all projects brought to this committee before they're implemented so that we can look at them. And that was one problem with the Sarnoff Road project, that it wasn't brought to us to review before it was actually implemented. So if we can make sure that we get any of those projects, whether it's a reconstruction or a restriping or whatever, then we can have that discussion and we can make our recommendation going forward if we don't feel that it's safe.
Lydia?
Eric, would you be able to clarify what the project extent, like what the cross streets are Broadway from?
I don't
remember the exact location that I saw. So the Broadway Corridor Committee had a couple of BAC people, at least one, I think, on the committee, and that individual was reporting back to us with some of the drawings and diagrams. And I just remember seeing one where in at least two, if not more locations, the bicycle rider was directed to go behind the bus bench, basically up on the sidewalk between the bus bench and the private property there or whatever business property was there, and then directed back into the roadway. And one or two of the locations seemed to have turn-ins for the businesses. So it just hit me as a personal injury attorney and a bicycle attorney that this is going to be in the news. So I don't know if that was finalized. I don't know if it got rejected and redone. I'm not sure where we're at with that, but I remember speaking out about it at the time.
Okay. And it's not possible that this is the First Avenue project. It's definitely on Broadway.
I recall it as being on Broadway, but if it occurs in other locations, it wouldn't surprise me. It's really an engineering idea that I don't think is a good one. It's a man-made situation, and the cyclist is injected back into the roadway at a very dangerous location. So I recall it being Broadway, but it could be other locations.
John Edgett,
has a hand raised. Yeah, I was just going to mention that, Daphne's comment about the timing of when the BAC becomes alerted to projects, that came to mind when we had the comment from the public earlier about the width of the medians. I think that was an example where I was thinking we're probably past the point where we can meaningfully give input on that project, even though that member of the public had brought that to us. As far as Grant Road is concerned, I think that those projects are already, they're already in progress, right? So once shovels are already been in the ground, we're not able to really give comments on that. So that just kind of reinforces how our ability to advise is handicapped by not knowing about what projects are going to be in the works when they're in those initial phases. I am not sure I have a solution for that, but it seems like an issue that has come up multiple times throughout my time on the committee.
Thank you, James.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that this similar kind of thing happens at downtown by the TCC around like Granada and Cushing. Like when you're going down Granada, the bike lane goes up on the sidewalk behind it goes like to the back of the sidewalk, I think maybe behind a bus stop or something, and then comes back down. But the area is unique and there's no right turn there. So it's not quite the same situation, but just wanted to mention it.
Okay, so I have a question. So if you don't like the bikes going behind the bus stop, is then the general idea the best implementation right now is the bus parks on the bike path, and so basically the bike has to stop and wait for the bus to go by? I mean, that happens to me on my bike, right? But is that best practice maybe, or safest practice? Does anyone know?
The design actually is an inset. If you had a bike bus lane like we do right now on Broadway, it's actually a cutout or an area where the bus moves to the right. And you could have the cyclist continue on the left side of the bus, but there was some reason why it was felt that that was not appropriate. And so they moved the cyclist all the way to the right, all the way around the bus and the bench. I don't remember enough as to why it was important to do that and why the bike or the bicyclist can't simply go to the left of the bus, because it was a bus pullout, if I recall correctly.
Okay, so you're thinking the best thing is that the bus pullout is so far to the right that the bicyclist could basically overtake the bus on the left side without having to cross into regular traffic. Is that right? Maybe?
That's kind of what I would do, but I know that, you know, the bus pulls over, the cyclist passes the bus loads up, unloads, whatever they're doing, they take off again, the bus passes the cyclist, then the bus pulls over, the cyclist passes the bus. I've been in that scenario. And I don't know if that's what was trying to be avoided. I don't know if there was a crossing there of some sort. I'm just looking at this scenario where we have a rider who's separated from traffic and then brought back into traffic. But we also did have the exact scenario where we had the rider between the curb and parked vehicles. So I think both of those situations I would call the blind right turn. Mm-hmm. And we just want to watch those.
So it seems the currently best standard is that the bus goes in and goes over the bike path, and the bus driver can be maybe be the kind of person to be trusted of looking out for bicyclists. I don't know.
They do a good job, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Suntran does, their drivers are very well educated on bicycle safety. I think they do a great job.
Okay. Good. Other thoughts, anyone on that topic? Okay, so we are getting close to 8 o'clock and we still have a few more minutes. But should we close this topic for now on the protected bike lanes? And we can bring it up in the future if any more specific things, please always email me. Good. So next agenda item, I mean, this was again a little bit open. We had ongoing discussions about how to improve bike safety. Given the interest of time, maybe there's not that much to now be opened and into bigger discussion, but in case anyone, I mean, certainly the bike safety is maybe one of the key issues that we have, given the fatalities and fatalities being on the rise and accidents being on the rise. So does anyone have specific ideas or also things we should put in future agenda items? Seems not to be the case, so please always reach out. I mean, good. So then agenda item number 12 is our typical anything we should be discussing in future meetings. Again, you can always reach out to Lydia throughout and me, but has anyone any agenda items you want to have discussed in the near future? Okay, seems not to be the case. So then next question is our next meeting. So I won't be here in June. And usually we take a meeting off in summer. Should we have a meeting in June or in July? Is there some general preference on when and when not to have the months off?
Ingmar, if you're not going to be here in June, but you will be in July, then why don't we take June off as our holiday, unless anyone strongly objects?
So we can do that. I cannot promise 100% that it will be on July, still evolving, but definitely not here in June. Okay, so basically we do the next meeting in July then, as usual, the third Wednesday of the month. I don't know what the exact date is right now. Okay, So then we have, if time allows, we have 5 minutes for any personal introduction, personal comments. Does anyone would like to share anything else? Can be anything. Yeah, please, Daphne.
I know I've been speaking a lot tonight, but I've got a lot of thoughts today. Yesterday, I was in Toulouse. It's a major, it's the capital of the department that we're in, which is sort of like the, like a small state here, and center of Airbus, the university, big aerospace campus. But they've got a very old and vibrant downtown with very narrow streets, a lot of little winding areas, a lot of pedestrian areas, and just a mass of bicycles, cargo bikes. 80% of the bikes were cargo bikes, people using them for transportation and utilitarian purposes. It was wonderful. I nearly got hit several times trying to cross the street, but it's very encouraging to see that. One other thing is that there's a major private car park, underground garage company here in France, Indigo. They have garages all over the country, but in the garages in Tucson, they must have at least 20 garages in Toulouse. They provide bicycle parking, secure locked bicycle storage, an enormous cage, if you will, parking for over 100 bikes. They may not have that many slots at their other locations in that same city, but they provide some in all of them, and it is secure. One project that they're just rolling out now in Paris and some of the other large cities is to work in cooperation with a bicycle repair company to provide bicycle maintenance and repair at their parking station so that you can sign up by subscription or book an appointment to have the bike worked on when you leave it there, you know, to go and do your business. It's just another example of where some municipalities are being very forward thinking in providing for bicycles as transportation, equally as recreation, but wherever people are using them. That is probably the one single deterrent, I would say, to utilitarian cycling in this part of the world here in Tucson for you. It's the end of trip facilities, not having secure bike parking. We've heard about it time and again from Anona at the campus, but it's true everywhere. I mean, that's the one thing that for me, you know, is making me decide not to ride my bike to go to the library, the grocery store, the cafe, whatever, because there is not good bike parking, secure bike parking. So, you know, it's good to see somewhere that it can be done well. Obviously, to a certain degree, it needs a certain critical mass to make it viable. But surely, to goodness, if we can provide free bus parking or bus riding in Tucson, we can provide free secure bike parking. Just a thought.
Thank you. Anyone else? Last minute. Okay, then thank you very much. I'm going to close the meeting. So most likely then 2 months from now, we'll send agenda items around. And please always reach out if you have anything or would like something to put on the agenda. Good. Thank you. Have a good time. Have a good summer. So Lydia, very quickly staying on.
Yeah.
So we have recorded this, right? So for Krista to make the meeting minutes, so you can send this to her or kind of share with her. Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And is there anything else we need to discuss or?
I don't think so.
Good. Okay.
If I think of anything. Oh, just wondering when you'll be out, like what times can't I reach you, I guess.
Oh, curious. So on this particular, we just go camping for a few days. So that's not that it's not that long. And then otherwise, I mean, I'm here most of the time. I don't check my private email every day, but I try now to do more often. But otherwise, you can, yeah.
Great.
Well,
enjoy your camping. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
Have a good night.